the left, with the left. You will fake, so won't go down you with the left, with the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, with the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, with the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, with the left. You will fake, so won't go down you with the left, with the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, with the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, with the left. God, please forgive me if this shit go left, cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self.
Son of a bitch. Son of three bitches. That doesn't even make sense. All right. Today's a good day. In the words of the immortal Ice Cube.
Break.
Today's a good day. Yeah, boy. All right, calm down. We're going to have to do that for the break, though. We got some Ice Cube coming up for the break because something went down last night in D.C., and yeah, good news. Haven't said that in a long time, but we'll talk about it. I'm going to leave with it in just a second here, but later on in the show, what do we have for you? Well, we got Anthony Scaramucci over here. He's busy yelling at reporters and telling them things he shouldn't be telling them. That's Trump's new communication director. That was a big story all over social media yesterday. We're going to discuss that. Also, Eric Bolling has an argument with his fellow Fox News hosts where he berates them for not focusing on real issues. That's wild that Eric Bolling decided to make that argument. And then also, I think we have proof that that U.S. empire is coming to an end. We now have wearable chairs. You can wear a chair. So we'll talk about all that and more. There wasn't two caffeine pills today. So if I'm not as up as I was yesterday, it's because I took the proper amount of caffeine today as opposed to double the amount. So let's go ahead and get started. And we're going to do that with the big news, of the day. Guess what, everybody? Trump care is officially dead. Obamacare is alive. So what happened last night was the Republicans, this was their last-ditch effort in the Senate to do something on the health care front. And what they did is they scaled everything back, and they said, all right, forget all the different versions of Trump care. There's at least four different versions floating around out there, a couple House versions, a couple Senate versions. And what we're going to do is try to get only the things that we think we could rally the troops around to support. So in other words, the thing on the table was called, or people are calling it, a skinny Obamacare repeal bill. So what's in the skinny Obamacare repeal? Well, it gets rid of the individual mandate, so one of the key provisions of Obamacare, that kind of is like the glue that keeps it together, even though, look, the individual mandate is something that I've spoken negatively about in the past because I don't like the idea that the government tells you, like, oh, you have to buy X. Like, no, don't tell me I have to buy X. If you say I need X, bitch, provide it to me. I mean, I'm paying taxes to you. What the fuck do you think this is? So I've had issues with the individual mandate, but just don't forget that that is the glue that kind of holds together Obamacare in the sense that it functions in any way, shape, or form. So they wanted to get rid of that, and then also other key provisions were part of it too, like the rule that big companies have to provide insurance for their workers. They wanted to get rid of that. Part of it is defunding Planned Parenthood for a certain period of time, I think for at least a year. So this skinny Obamacare repeal, it's not really all that skinny in what the effects would be on the American people. So the CBO was able to do a quick analysis of this and break it down by the numbers, and they found that if the skinny repeal were to pass, premiums would increase by 20% and 16 million people would lose their health insurance. So even though the consequences are less disastrous than going full Trump care and getting 23 million more people knocked off their health insurance, and doing a gigantic tax cut to the rich, and cutting $800 billion in Medicaid spending, even though it's not the full problem here, it would be, I mean, that's horrendous, 20% increase in premiums and 16 million people kicked off insurance. So, it's serious, man. This is something that is very serious. So, what happened? Well, Republican Senators Susan Collins of Maine, of course, John McCain of Arizona, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska voted against the bill, and it is dead. Dead as a doornail. So, after all the years, I mean, the Republicans have ran countless campaigns on the idea we got to get rid of Obamacare, we got to repeal and replace Obamacare, and now there's no hope of it. They could not reconcile the far right of the party with the somewhat far right of the party. So, the reason I say that is you had Republicans who are typically from more blue states, there's some effects of this bill that would basically guarantee they don't get reelected if they were to do any kind of Obamacare repeal and vote for any version of Trumpcare. So it's hard to reconcile that with the so-called Freedom Caucus, the Tea Partiers, who basically said, just give me a sledgehammer and I'm going to swing it at this healthcare law and I want to make it so that Obamacare doesn't exist and we don't even care if we get anything to replace it. We just want a full repeal. So you can't reconcile those two things, and in fact, they weren't able to do it. And one of the biggest reasons is there is no standard GOP vision of what the healthcare system should look like. It doesn't exist. Now, if you talk to anybody on the left, I'm not talking about Democratic politicians because we all know they're questionable in terms of they take money from big pharma and for-profit health insurance companies, so they're biased and they're corrupt in many respects. But if you talk to any progressive, hey, what's the end-all be-all for healthcare? They'll tell you Medicare for all, like that. Not even a question. Not even a question. Yeah, Medicare for all. So we have our go-to answer, and to be fair, based on the evidence, so it's not like it's a bad answer. In fact, it's the only answer that really makes sense when you look at every other industrialized nation. They have better healthcare than us. They cover more people at less cost because they have one version or another of a single-payer system. But when you ask a Republican, hey, what's your ideal system? Like, oh, Obamacare is bad. Let me tell you why Obamacare is bad. No. Okay, I get it. I know what you're against. I know what you're against. What are you for? What's your ideal system? Well, you know what we should do is we should get rid of the lines around the states to allow the health insurance companies to go so you can purchase health insurance across state lines. And we should do tort reform to make sure that you can't sue. And if you do sue, then there's a cap on how much money you make. And we should make sure that the market is free. The market is free. So that's the only answer you get when you push somebody on the far right about, hey, what's your ideal health care and health insurance system? Yeah, free market. Okay, but you do realize that we had that system directly before Obamacare. We still have it now with Obamacare. It's just that there are more rules and regulations that the health insurance companies have to play by, like, for example, protections for pre-existing conditions, and kids can stay on their parents' health insurance until they're 26, and so on and so forth. But back then, it was even more of a free market before Obamacare, and that led to all the problems which required immediate reform. So they don't have an answer. They've based their whole philosophy and ideology on, yeah, Obama's bad, we don't like him, he's bad. Except, what's the problem with that? You came up with the individual mandate system. It was a Republican system. You don't believe me? Go look at what Richard Nixon proposed. It was an individual mandate style system. Go look at what Bob Dole was proposing in the 90s, an individual mandate style system. Go look at what Mitt Romney, Republican governor of Massachusetts, implemented in Massachusetts, individual mandate style system. So it's your idea. Fucking Newt Gingrich and Chuck Grassley, far right Republicans, supported that idea as their answer to what the Democratic idea is supposed to be, which is single payer. So they don't have a coherent philosophy. And on top of all that, it's basically impossible for them to balance how much they've sold out to for-profit health insurance companies and big pharma, and at the same time, make sure their constituents don't wipe them out in the next election cycle. You can't walk that path. What's good for the for-profit health insurance companies and big pharma is the exact opposite of what's good for your constituents. So you might be in favor of a bill that knocks over 20 million people off of health insurance and gets rid of protections for pre-existing conditions, and your donors will be happy, but you just pissed off every single goddamn constituent you have. So they're in a corner. It's a no-win situation. And they weren't able to get, even when you whittle it down to the bare minimum of the things that they promised. All right, can we do a full Obamacare repeal and put in place this insane bill? No. Can we do a full Obamacare repeal and not even put in a replacement bill? No. Can we whittle down the provisions of Obamacare that we're repealing and get that passed? No. You can't fucking do it because you don't stand for anything. And every time any expert said anything about the provisions in your bill, they go, this is the dumbest thing I've ever fucking seen in my life. And they're right, and they're right. Now, the Democrats, they need to, you know, keep your eyes wide open about this shit. I mean, it's not, you can't just defend Obamacare and act like that's the end-all be-all, because it's not the end-all be-all. You're defending a system that's a little bit more than 50% in terms of popularity. Meanwhile, Medicare for All, 62% of the American people favor Medicare for All. 77% of the American people say, when you just ask them about Medicare, do you like Medicare? They say they like that. So we know what the Democrats need to push for. Don't just play defense on Obamacare, because that's not enough. And now the Republicans are handing you a golden opportunity so that you set the narrative, you frame the debate, and you can hammer them moving forward on this issue. By the way, Mitch McConnell was crying on the floor last night. We've tried for so long, I'm a turtle, we've tried for so long to try to get it so that we got rid of Obamacare and we couldn't do it. Oh, what do my friends on the other side want? Do they want a European-style system? Nobody wants that. He was like implying that people don't want Medicare for All. Yeah, let me introduce you to this thing called polling, you massive douche weasel. They do. Spoiler alert. And also, apparently Mike Pence, so Mike Pence is viewed as, oh, he's the one who can bring the Republicans together. He can marry the establishment wing with the Freedom Caucus. Well, guess what? Pence took aside McCain. Now, Murkowski and Collins were against it from the beginning. They voted against all the preliminary, like all the preliminary votes that led up to this vote, they voted against them. So they were clear that they weren't going to be for this skinny repeal bill or any repeal bill to this point. But McCain was the one who was on the fence, who people were like, well, I don't know. And actually, I don't know how much he was actually on the fence. When you look at his goofy-ass speech the other day where he voted to advance the bill, he did make clear in that speech that he wasn't going to vote for the bill if it stayed as is. But people were saying, oh, okay, McCain's on the fence. So Mike Pence took him aside, and he's, you know, trying to schmooze him and get him to come over, and McCain's like, no, yeah, no. There was one point, I was watching it on C-SPAN 2 because I have no life. So he goes outside, McCain leaves the floor. Why? He got a phone call. Who was calling him? President Trump. Trump was trying to get him to, at the last minute, flip his vote. He was trying to convince him. Mr. I make deals. Couldn't make a fucking deal. He couldn't do it. And McCain, when they were doing the vote, McCain walks up to the front of the Senate, and they say, you know, Senator McCain. He goes, no, and then he walks away. So it was a pretty funny moment. And as I was tweeting yesterday, I think going on in McCain's head at the time was on a loop when Trump said on the campaign trail, "Oh, McCain, it's Senator McCain. People say he's a hero. He's a hero because he was captured. I like people who weren't captured." Okay, in his mind, probably, because McCain's a vindictive motherfucker. And you say some shit like that about him, he might pull that out at a random fucking time. So, and let's be clear, this doesn't mean John McCain is all of a sudden good. He's not. He's never met a fucking war he didn't like. Every now and then, he's a maverick and bucks the trend and like, oh, he was one Republican who stood up against torture. What a low bar. Like, oh, he's not in favor of fucking torturing people. Wow, what a fucking moral beacon we have here. But yes, on this vote, he was absolutely correct. He shouldn't have even voted to advance the bill, but he did. So there you have it, man. Trump care is dead. The Obamacare repeal is dead. Trump was tweeting earlier today that we need to get rid of the 60-vote threshold. Whoa. What the fuck happened, son? What happened? You and every single Republican under Obama,
with 60 votes, you need 60 votes. 60 votes pass anything. I have 60 votes to do absolutely anything. We need 60 votes, 60 votes, 60 votes.
The second these motherfuckers are in control. Oh, yeah, 60, we say 60? 51 is, I mean, it's a simple majority. Simple majority makes sense, right? Let's go to a simple majority. I don't know why we... So, yeah. But this didn't even clear 50, to be clear. I don't know if Trump knows that or not, but I don't know. I think now he might be worried about the rest of his agenda, so he's thinking, shit, there's no way we're going to get 60 for anything. So let's go down to 50. So Trump Care is dead. The Obamacare repeal is dead. McCain, Murkowski, and Collins were the ones who killed it. The base of their party is going to despise them. Their constituents, I think, do despise them already, but they did make it so that at least 16 million more people won't lose their insurance and premiums won't rise by another 20%. So the Democrats need to take this and now, run into the end zone and spike the ball and start screaming about Medicare for All, because we need to have an answer of what we're for, not just what we're against. It's, oh, hey, Trump Care is bad. Yeah, we got it. Now what are you for? Medicare for All. Medicare for All. Push for it. Don't stop until we get there, because Elizabeth Warren tweeted last night, oh, the nightmare's over, at least for now. That's what she said after this happened. No. The nightmare's never over until we get Medicare for All. I saw a story earlier today. There's a couple that killed themselves because they couldn't afford their health care. That just happened in America in 2017. So the nightmare's not over. It's never over until we get Medicare for All. Let's move forward. By the way, sign our petition on that, justicedemocrats.com/singlepayer. Okay. Next. I want to discuss this Huffington Post article that nearly made me break my computer yesterday. This is from Igor Bobik. I think he usually does a good job, but he didn't in this one. So look at this. GOP uses single-payer health care amendment to trick vulnerable Dems. The strategy didn't work. All right, hold on one second. What? What do you mean? So the Republicans proposed a single-payer health care amendment to trick Democrats? What does that mean? They're giving you what you want, what you're supposed to want. That's what it really is. So you know what that reminded me of? You ever see that episode of Family Guy, old episode of Family Guy, where Peter's like negotiating for something, and he's like, all right, I'll give you $25 for it. The guy's like, no. Peter's like, I'll give you $3 for it. Or something like that. And he's like, sorry, he doesn't know how to negotiate. That's what this reminds me of. So, like, the Democrats are given exactly what they want. And they're like, no. What the fuck? Okay, let's see what they have to say. The Senate on Thursday rejected a Republican amendment that would have implemented a government-run single-payer health care system. The amendment proposed by Senator Steve Daines would have expanded Medicare to the entire U.S. population, a policy idea that progressives increasingly view as a key litmus test at the ballot box. Daines did not actually support his amendment. Rather, he offered it on the floor in a clever attempt to force vulnerable Democrats from red states who are up for re-election in 2018 to cast tough votes. While most progressives believe the nation should have a single-payer health care system, polling shows such an idea is viewed less favorably by the country as a whole. Let's pause there. Igor, you are factually incorrect. The only link that he provides in his own goddamn article says 60% of the American people want a universal health care system. They say it's the federal government's responsibility to cover everybody. What the fuck, Igor? What the fuck? Now, by the way, it also depends on how you frame it and the words you use. But today, even when you use the least favorable language, single payer, it still gets over 50%. When you say universal health care, government's responsibility to insure people, it gets 60%. When you say Medicare for All, it gets 62%. So by every single measure, it has majority approval. In fact, in some polls, More Republicans support it than don't support it. So Republicans are in favor of it. Independents are in favor of it. Democrats are in favor of it. The country as a whole is in favor of it. The Medicare program itself has over a 70% approval rating. It's one of the most popular programs in U.S. history.
The Republicans are trying to trick us by giving us exactly what we want and what would make us incredibly popular if we voted for it. But we're going to vote against it, and we'll show them. Wow, you're all so fucking stupid. And Igor, you are wrong. Fucking fix your goddamn article. It's not true that, crazy progressives. Oh, far left. Unicorn, fairy dust, rainbows and puppies. Oh, that's where they frolic in a field and stuff. Oh, that's where they're as little free love hippies dropping acid and shit and wanting people to get health care and whatnot. Stop portraying it as a fringe issue. It is not. It is an American issue. More. Quote, President Trump talks about making America great again. The Democrats, they want to make America England again, Danes told reporters on Thursday, referring to the British healthcare system. Nearly every Democrat from a red state joined Republicans in voting against the amendment, including Senators Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, John Tester of Montana, and Joe Donnelly of Indiana. Senator Claire McCaskill, a vulnerable Democrat from Missouri who is also up for re-election next year, joined 43 of her Democratic colleagues in simply voting present. Again, let me pause. That means zero Democrats voted for it. Zero Democrats. The ones who want to bullshit you and pretend like they're for it voted present when they want to pretend like they're for it down the road. They said, I'm present. I'm not for it, but I'm present. And the ones who think that they're earning political points in their red states by saying they're against it voted against it. Wow. More. Abstaining let Democrats sidestep the thorny vote that both sides of the aisle recognize as a stunt. Vulnerable Democrats, meanwhile, got an opportunity to join Republicans and cast themselves as capable of working across the aisle. Dane's attempt to divide Democrats was undercut on Wednesday after Senator Bernie Sanders, a key advocate of single-payer, announced he would oppose the amendment. Sanders popularized Medicare for All among progressives during his presidential campaign last year and is expected to introduce legislation later this summer that would implement a single-payer system. Speaking from the Senate floor before the vote, Sanders gamely congratulated Danes and his GOP colleagues for finally coming around to the idea of single-payer. He then offered Danes a deal. Sanders said he would vote in favor of the amendment if a handful of Republicans did too. All we need is five votes, guys, Sanders shouted as he strode through a group of smiling Republicans who clearly had no intention of taking him up on the offer. It was clear the vote provided all senators a brief moment of levity amidst what has been an intense week of furious negotiations over the GOP health care bill. All right, pause again. What in the holy fuck is going on here? They didn't get you. This isn't like a... They think in their mind, the Republicans think, oh, we got them. Let's propose exactly what they should want, and let's get them on the record. And then when they're for the thing that they should want and the American people want, aha, we'll pounce. And then we'll beat those vulnerable red state Democrats. That's what they're thinking, guys. That's what the Republicans are thinking. They're thinking, well, obviously Medicare for All is so unpopular. Oh, you want to make America England again? You want a European-style healthcare system? Fine, we'll give you an amendment on that. They think they're getting Democrats on the record, and that's a vote that they can hammer them over the head with. And what do the Republicans do? Even Bernie Sanders goes, we're not falling for that trick. But the Republicans are a bunch of idiots, and the trick that they just gave you would help you and the entire Democratic Party if you took the opportunity and said, yes, I am in favor of that. If every single goddamn Democrat voted yes on the single-payer amendment, that's something you could use to hammer them over the head with in the next election cycle. But you're all too fucking stupid to realize that it's popular in the entire goddamn country. How do you not get this? How do you not fucking get this? Do none of you believe in what you're supposed to believe in? Have none of you read a single goddamn poll that came out in the last year on single payer? The Republican ideas are colossally unpopular. Nobody wants them. When you go issue for issue, the American people are overwhelmingly progressive. And then the Republicans think they're cornering Democrats by saying, oh, here, how about we propose a minimum wage increase and make it like a living wage. Hey, Democrats, are you going to vote in favor of that and commit political suicide? And the Democrats are like, oh, the Republicans are right. If we vote for, like, a living wage, that'll be political suicide. Oh, if we vote to, like, tax the rich, that'll be political suicide. If we vote to, like, legalize marijuana, that'll be political suicide. Every single one of those fucking things is overwhelmingly popular, and none of you know it because you're all so incredibly disconnected. This is the most maddening fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, they think they're playing three-dimensional chess, but they're playing volleyball at the Nutty House wearing helmets. Wearing those soft helmets. Like, are you kidding me? None of you, even Bernie, could be like, wait, what? Imagine for a second the Democrats tried to pull some shit like this on Republicans. They said, we're going to propose an amendment to whatever random bill you want to talk about, and it is going to cut taxes on the rich massively and make the top rate 33% or whatever. What would the Republicans do? What would they do? Would they go, oh, you're trying to get me. I'm going to vote against it because this is a trap. They go, thank you. Yes. The Democrats, when the Republicans say, hey, here's a single-payer amendment. They're like, oh, I'm not going to fall for this trick of you giving me exactly what I want and something that would up my chances of winning re-election and make the American people really happy and something I can campaign on from now until forever. I'm going to vote no. Or I'm going to vote present. Even the argument about the people in red states is incorrect, because Bernie Sanders was doing town halls in West Virginia, deep in Trump country. He had a room full of Trump voters. He got them to cheer and give a standing ovation to free college and Medicare for all and a new deal and a living wage. He laid out his agenda, and they cheered him. And the Republicans give you this opportunity, and you're like, yeah, no thanks. All right, a little more here for you. At one point during the vote, McCaskill, along with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Debbie Stabenow, surrounded Daines on the floor and chastised him for his wily attempt to push through a single-payer program. What the fuck did I just read? This is what's called a trick, McCaskill could be heard saying. She offered to vote for the amendment if Daines did as well. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska jokingly entertained the idea of voting for the amendment. I've got to think about this, she yelled. Moments before voting against it. Even Sanders was in good spirits. At one point on the floor, he approached Senator Lindsey Graham, grasped him by the shoulders, and playfully attempted to physically lead him back to the, whatever the fuck that word is, in hopes of changing his vote in favor of the amendment. Daines' amendment aside, there is some evidence that Democratic leaders are warming up to the idea of running on single-payer. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, for example, raised eyebrows earlier this month when he said that single-payer health care system is now on the table. Well, apparently, they're not actually considering it, because when given the opportunity in what's an attempted trick from the Republicans, they don't know the right thing to do. So primary all the motherfuckers, man. This is absolute garbage. This is disgusting. JusticeDemocrats.com. JusticeDemocrats.com. Do it right now. Our candidates are for single payer across the board. And they don't take any corporate money. They don't take any PAC money. They represent the people. They don't represent big money donors. So JusticeDemocrats.com/fight also if you want to donate to them, which we need because we're at a disadvantage since we don't take big money. So we need a lot of small donations from a lot of people. This story infuriated me. You have no idea how much it got under my skin. They're so smug, and they think they got it all figured out when they're exactly 100% incorrect. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, a Republican is going to tell you what he thinks is an ideal healthcare system. And then Anthony Scaramucci, Donald Trump's boy over here, he lost it talking to a reporter, and there are some funny quotes. So we'll talk about that and then more. Break. We'll be right back.
so one bone deaf, you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake so one bone deaf, you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like
son of a bitch, alright, we're back in the bike.
Let's keep it going. Alright, now we're going to get a clear vision of what a GOP congressman says he wants here in terms of health care. Representative Brian Babin, a Republican of Texas, went on the Family Research Council's Washington Watch radio show, and he gave us some great insight into what the far right really thinks about the issue of health insurance and health care.
But the sad reality is that we've had a taste of socialized medicine, government knows best, and even some of our Republicans are reluctant to turn the clock back a little bit on this. And they are, you know, I don't know what I can say except that we've got to give the American people what they voted for. Overwhelmingly, the American people want to get rid of this thing. I'm sick and tired of listening to Democrats saying, don't get rid of it, just reform it and fix it. This is after they lied and used disingenuous methods to ram this down our throats. Not one Republican voted for it. Overwhelmingly, the American people were against this, you know, back 7.5 years ago. And it needs to be repealed and replaced. And so failure is not an option. I think my colleagues in the Senate need to get together and let's get something that we can offer the American people to get them freedom and choice. And why should a 25 or 30 year old man have to have maternity insurance? Why should every policy have a drug rehab clause in it and coverage in it? These are just government knows best insurance regs that make the prices go up. So we've got to give them some choices here.
God, he's so stupid, it hurts. So yet again, this reminds me of that Paul Ryan clip where he's describing how, well, look, under Obamacare, what you have is, like, younger, healthier people paying into the system, and, like, it's going to all the older people who need the health care. Yeah, that's called insurance. Do you not get that? Now, this jackass is like, why? I don't understand why we have, 25, 30-year-old males. Why would they need to pay into a system that gives out maternity care and does, like, drug rehab? Okay, take that idiotic logic and apply it across the board. Now, why would a 25 or 30-year-old who's a safe driver need to have insurance for broken legs and broken arms? He's a safe driver. He don't get into no accidents. Why would a 25 or 30-year-old have to pay into insurance that covers heart-related issues or cancer? He's young. He's not going to get heart-related issues or cancer. You could apply that anywhere. Yeah, we get it. When you're young and healthy, you're young and healthy. At that time, you don't think, oh, I'm never going to need it because I'm young and healthy right now. But who knows? You do get into a car accident. You do have a wife and the wife gets pregnant. You do stumble into a drug problem. Or somebody in your family does, your kid who's on your health insurance rolls. You do get cancer at a certain age or get heart disease, have a heart attack young. These things fucking happen, man. And even if they don't happen, that's still the point of insurance. You pay in, and then the people who need the care get it, and they don't go broke when they need it. And then you, when you're older and you hit a time where you need it, you get it because everybody's paying into the system. That's insurance. The whole idea is that let's not put it on each individual, because if you put it on each individual, well, then people are going to go bankrupt all the fucking time, because when catastrophe hits, they don't have the money in order to pay for it. But this is how these guys think. They're such simpletons. Oh, my God, man. Oh, that's so sad. And then just real quick, the final point about this. He gives up. Obamacare is very unpopular with the American people, and we've been saying we're going to do this all along. We got to deliver for them. Only 9% of the American people want a full repeal of Obamacare. 9%. 9%. That's nothing. Now, furthermore, when you look at more in-depth polling about Obamacare, so yes, when you ask just about Obamacare, then it varies. Sometimes 52% of people say I support it, 52% of people say I'm against it. So sometimes it's a little underwater, a little overwater. But when you go provision by provision in Obamacare, virtually every position, provision in Obamacare is overwhelmingly popular. So it's misleading to say, oh, yeah, Obamacare. And then also the Affordable Care Act, which is the same thing as Obamacare, when you poll about, on that, it's almost always over 50%. So you just change the how you're phrasing it and change the way you word the question, and then people go, oh, yeah, I love that one. So it's the guy's just wrong. He has no clue what the fuck he's talking about. He's simply not bright enough to try to craft policy that has to do with health care and health insurance and people's lives. But there he is, expressing his ignorance on a radio show. All right, let's go to the story a lot of you have been waiting for. Anthony Scaramucci is Trump's new communications director, and apparently a few nights ago he decided to call Ryan Lizza of, I don't know if people say Liza, whatever. It's pizza, but with an L instead of a P. So this guy is from The New Yorker, and Scaramucci called him because he's pissed that Lizza reported that Trump was having dinner with Sean Hannity and former Fox News executive Bill Shine. So somebody leaked this, Lizza reported on it, Scaramucci saw that he reported on it, and he said, oh, what the fuck, we got these leaks when he apparently just told people, hey, don't leak anything. So he calls him, and here's what's in the call according to Lizza. I'm going to give you his direct quotes that he says Scaramucci said on the phone, and Scaramucci didn't deny this, he basically confirmed it by saying, yeah, sometimes I use colorful language. He said that when this came out. So let me give you what Scaramucci said here. I'm going to give it in a classic offensive Italian-American accent, and I can get away with it because I'm Italian-American. Who leaked that to you? What I'm going to do is I will eliminate – I like how my Trump accent and my Italian accent are the same. That's funny. What I'm going to do is I'll eliminate everyone in the comms team. We'll start over. I asked these guys not to leak anything, and they can't help themselves. You're an American citizen. This is a major catastrophe for the American country. The American country. So I'm asking you as an American patriot to give me a sense of who leaked it. Is it an assistant to the president? Okay, I'm going to fire every one of them. And then you haven't protected anybody. So the entire place will be fired over the next 2 weeks. They'll all be fired by me. I fired one guy the other day. I have 3 to 4 people I'll fire tomorrow. I'll get to the person who leaked that to you. Reince Priebus, if you want to leak something, he'll be asked to resign very shortly. Reince is a fucking paranoid schizophrenic. A paranoic. Oh, Bill Shine is coming in? Let me leak the fucking thing and see if I can cock-block these people the way I cock-blocked Scaramucci for 6 months. All right, let me just pause there. What he's referring to is apparently Scaramucci sold his – he was a hedge fund guy and rich douchebag, and he sold his business or one of his businesses because he was promised a position in the administration, and Reince Priebus allegedly blocked him from getting that position by talking Trump out of giving it to Scaramucci. For whatever reason, Priebus didn't like Scaramucci, so he basically, yeah, cock-blocked him from getting a position. Well, you know, time passed, Spicer's gone, Trump picks him for communication director, Scaramucci, and apparently Priebus still doesn't like him. So Priebus and Scaramucci are clashing like they're on a fucking Real Housewives episode. All right, more. I'm not Steve Bannon. I'm not trying to suck my own cock. I'm not trying to build my own brand off the fucking strength of the president. I'm here to serve the country. What I want to do is I want to fucking kill all the leakers, and I want to get the president's agenda on track so we can succeed for the American people. Okay, the mooch showed up a week ago. This is going to get cleaned up very shortly, okay? Because I nailed these guys. I've got digital fingerprints on everything they've done through the FBI and the fucking Department of Justice. Well, the felony... they're going to get prosecuted probably for the felony. Yeah, let me go, though, because I've got to start tweeting some shit to make this guy crazy. And then minutes later, he tweeted this at Reince Priebus. In light of the leak of my financial info, which is a felony, I will be contacting the FBI and the Justice Department. Hashtag swamp at Reince45. All right, so that last thing he's referring to is Scaramucci's financial information got leaked. And he flipped out. He's like, oh, no, what are you doing? There's not that there's anything wrong in my financial information, but no, you're not allowed to leak. This is a felony. This is wrong. He's convinced Reince Priebus is the one that leaked it to the press. Except what's the only problem? His financial information was publicly available through the Export-Import Bank. So a journalist, I guess, applied to get the information from the Export-Import Bank. It was approved. They released his financial information. Scaramucci flipped out, was convinced it was Priebus who, behind the scenes, was leaking his financial information and leaking other stuff. And you heard me say it.
He's a paranoid schizophrenic, Reince Priebus. Steve Bannon, he loves to suck his own cock. So naturally this is big on the internet because it just shows that...
Yeah, what it shows is the personal side of politics that for the longest time was kept under wraps, even under other hideous administrations like George W. Bush. A lot of the infighting and the personal drama and who likes this person versus doesn't like that person and who's friends and who's not friends and who's enemies and who's trying to jockey for position within the administration, that shit was largely kept under wraps. Under Trump, him and his people, they're too stupid to like keep it under wraps, so you have moments like this. Now, this guy's such a dumbass. He was like,
I thought I trusted the reporter. I thought he wouldn't run with the story.
Why? Why did you trust him? What the fuck is wrong with you? So, yeah, he's too stupid to keep it under wraps. But, here's my conclusion on this. The media needs to calm down and focus on the political issues that affect people's lives. Because there was more coverage on this yesterday than on any other issue. And it was such a big day for Obamacare and Trump care and health care in general and next is going to be taxes, and you want to focus on these side stories as shit like that's going on. But yes, I will grant you that it shows that they're a bunch of fucking man babies who are running the goddamn country, who are bickering like it's a Real Housewives episode, and they're certainly unfit to be in the positions that they're in. Okay. All right, I got one more with Scaramucci here, and then we will take a break. Oh, wrong. We won't. I got at least two more before we take a break. Okay. So let's go to the new Scaramucci one. This one is, I got a clip of him really showing his colors. Anthony Scaramucci, Trump's new communication director, spoke to the BBC, and he mentioned that Donald Trump is not an elitist. He's not. And then the back and forth that followed him making that claim, it's hilarious. Let's watch.
So here's what's going to happen. Trump is not
we're going to move on.
The business side or the politics side or the inheritance side, what part of Donald Trump? Many people in the UK don't understand that.
There's so many things about the president.
He's a celebrity. He's a billionaire.
How about the pizza that we're
eating? Everyone eats cheeseburgers and pizzas. What are you talking about?
You're coming across a little bit elitist, so let me just say something to you, okay? I grew up in a middle-class family, okay? We had virtually a tight budget and little to no money. I spent 30 years of my life trying to get into the global elite so I could stand here and serve the president, and I missed the movement. You know why I missed the movement? Is I tunneled myself into elites, and we had this circular conversation about what was going on, which was completely wrong.
Donald Trump is not elite. He's not an elite.
Oh, very much so. He's both.
No.
He knows how to operate in an elitist world, and he has unbelievable empathy for the common struggle that's going on with the middle class people and the lower middle class people. He has something that frankly I don't have, and it's embarrassing for me to admit it to you on a live television show, but I missed the movement. I grew up in a middle class family, and I didn't size the economic desperation that was taking place in my hometown.
Okay. A bit of good news.
He showed it to me.
Okay. There's so much of that I love. So first of all, his original argument as to why Donald Trump is not elitist is the cheeseburgers and the pizza. Oh, really? You're telling me he's elitist? Have you seen his diet? He eats cheeseburgers. He eats pizza. Like, what? What? That's your argument as to why he's not elitist? Look at the food he eats. So what, is every, elitist... Are they eating caviar off a Himalayan orphan's back? Like, what? Like, what the fuck are you saying? Well, he eats pizzas and cheeseburgers. Tremendous.
So obviously he's not elitist. I mean, look at his diet.
Yeah, no, you can you can still be a massive insider and an elitist douchebag and, you know, eat like that, of course. So that's a weak argument to begin with. But then what people are mentioning about this clip is how Scaramucci contradicts himself. So he goes, I grew up middle class. So he's basically arguing, look, I wasn't elite. I tried to work my way to the global elite so I could serve the president. I grew up middle class. And then a little bit later, he talks about how, I grew up middle class, so I didn't know the economic desperation of a lot of people. Wait, so which is it? Because you originally argued, hey, man, I wasn't elite. So, like, that's, I can relate with the president. I know he's not elite, and we know the pain that's going on around the country. That was the first argument he made when he said, I grew up middle class. And the second time he brought it up, it was in the context of, I was out of touch because I grew up middle class, so I didn't know the desperation many people had who were below me on the economic ladder. So at one point he argues he's not elite, so he can relate, and Trump can relate to regular people. And then the next breath he's like, no, I did grow up middle class, but I was elite enough to not feel the pain of people, and Trump opened my eyes to it. Again, so which is it? See, this is the fucking hallmark of people who are con artists and bullshitters, is that they'll, like, casually contradict themselves, but in a way where unless you stop and think about it, you won't realize that they just contradicted themselves. And then, of course, the best part is he goes from arguing, well, Trump's not elite, cheeseburgers, pizza, something. He goes from that to as soon as she pushes back on him, and credit to her for doing that because she did it in a great way, a solid way, he goes, no, he's both. You're telling me, she's like, what part of Donald Trump is not elite? What part of him is not elite? I mean, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His daddy was had multiple hundreds of millions of dollars. Donald Trump himself is wealthy. He's the fucking president of the United States. He's got Goldman Sachs in his administration. He's been making decisions that hurt the American people. What part of him is not elite? What part of him is not elite? Well, yeah, see, what had happened was he's both. He's not elite because cheeseburgers and pizza. He is elite because he's elite, but he can feel the pain of regular people who he's screwing over. Scaramucci reminds me so much of just guys I grew up around. Guys I know, you know. He's got that, like, classic fake straight shooter thing going on. Trump does too, by the way. Trump does too. He said, the way he talks makes you think, oh, that guy's got to be, you know, telling me the truth, no filter. We're going to make America great again. Believe me. Let me just tell you. Scaramucci's got a similar thing going on. Like, look, I know a guy over there, and I can get you a deal. You want a deal? Sells amazing vehicles, used vehicles, but great used vehicles. Never had a problem with any of them. And then you go, you know, buy the thing, and it falls apart when you pull out of the lot. That's what Scaramucci reminds me of. Okay. All right, now let's move on to the state of free speech in the on the right wing. So I have a new threat to free speech for everybody. This came out this week. Poll, 45% of Republican voters support closing biased or inaccurate outlets. President Donald Trump isn't alone in his disdain for the so-called fake news media. A new Economist YouGov poll found that 45% of Republicans support permitting the courts to shut down news media outlets for publishing or broadcasting stories that are biased or inaccurate. Wow. So nearly half of Republicans do not agree with the First Amendment. They don't agree with free speech or a free press. Free expression. They don't believe in it. Wow. I mean, think about that. Like, if you ask people, hey, man, do you like, whatever, Fox News? Do you like MSNBC? You're going to get very different reactions from different people. You're telling me that if you're talking to half of Republicans and you ask them, should the government shut down outlets that you don't like? They'd say yes. Half Republicans go, yeah. And by the way, they're so ridiculous that they don't realize how quickly this can be flipped back on them.
Yeah, the government should shut down biased and biased media outlets.
Well, then what happens when if the government were to try to shut down Fox News? Then they would flip on a dime and say, no, free speech, free expression. What are we talking about here?
We can't just ban the outlets because we don't like what they say.
But wait, you just said that we should do that. You just said we should do that if it's biased or inaccurate. So which is it? Because Fox News is biased and inaccurate all the fucking time. In fact, if you were to map it out empirically, there's no doubt that there's more bullshit, more lies, more inaccurate statements said on Fox News than on MSNBC. And I despise MSNBC too, don't get me wrong, but Fox News is way worse in terms of if you objectively measure, hey, what percentage of the things they say are true versus not true. So can we stop these fucking triggered little snowflakes?
Media's being mean to President Trump.
Poop face. I don't like it. Let's shut them down if they say mean things. That is so authoritarian. That is like the definition of authoritarian. I don't like what you say, so I'm going to shut you down. And who, like, you really think you have a monopoly on the fucking truth? You really think so? If you're talking about,
yeah, everything I believe is true. Everything the outlets I don't like say is false.
That's just not correct. That's just not correct. And who is going to watch the Watchmen? So are you going to give the government the ability to do this? You're the same people who say the government can't do anything right. So if you follow your own logic, the government will fuck up the media institutions even worse. What are you going to do, have the same people who run the DMV decide who to shut down and who to keep open? Like, what the... they're so stupid. They're so stupid. So, look, I've been trying to make this point for a very long time. I feel like I'm the only one making this fucking point. But when you talk about free speech and free expression, oftentimes the only group discussed in that conversation are dumbass, oversensitive college kids and how they're rather authoritarian and they want to disinvite conservative speakers and stuff. Look, I'm against them when they do that, 100%. I would invite them and I'd say, hey, go ahead, you say whatever you want, even if I disagree with it, of course. But let's not be ridiculous and narrow-minded and ignore the fact that there's also a gigantic threat to free speech that comes from the right wing. President Donald Trump himself sued The Onion over a satire article about him. He sued Bill Maher over a joke that he didn't like, that hurt his feelings. You want to talk about a triggered little snowflake bitch who needs a safe space from a microaggression? That's Donald Trump, right-wing snowflake. As my friend Leon calls them, social injustice warriors. That's what they are. And here you have nearly half the Republican Party. Yeah, close the outlets that are biased or inaccurate. If you don't believe in freedom of speech, for those whose opinions you despise the most, you don't believe in it at all. Okay. It is break time. When we come back, we talk about Hillary Clinton's new book, and then Eric Folling had an argument with his fellow Fox News host, and it was sad, I guess is the best word to use. All right, we'll be right back, guys. We'll be right back.
I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. You will fake so I'm gon' drop you with the left, I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
All right, everybody, we are back, we are back, we are back. And we have about five more for you. We're going to try to squeeze in last block of the week. So let's jump into the Hillary Clinton story. Get your face palms ready. I want to tell you guys before we get to the next headline that this is not the Onion. I promise. This is real. Now, having said that, Hillary Clinton's new book, What Happened, will address the 2016 election. She wrote a book called What Happened about the 2016 election. Come on, Hillary. This is so Hillary. This is just so her. As the country's moving a million miles an hour right now, people are worried, oh, they just slapped new sanctions on Russia and Iran and North Korea, so the Iran deal's getting blown up right in our faces. We have the incredibly down-to-the-wire vote last night about Trump Care and the Obamacare repeal, and people are talking about health care and Medicare for All and all these substantive issues, and everything's moving so fast, and everybody's so busy in the political world. And what does Hillary do? I released a book about me and about my presidential campaign and what happened. Here, I bequeath this upon everybody here, and you can read about me and my thoughts on what happened. And you already know what's in the fucking book. You already know. Because it's driving her crazy, and she's trying to rationalize everything. You can't just accept the answer. It's you. It's you. It's you. She's like the needy boyfriend who gets broken up with by the girlfriend, and then the boyfriend keeps going, oh, I do wrong. I love you, man. And she's like, dude, you're doing it right now. That's what this is. What happened? I'll tell you what happened. No, we don't want to hear it, because you're doing it right now. You're profoundly unlikable, because you write books called What Happened after you lose the most easily winnable election in human history. And what are you going to do? Pawn off all the responsibility yet again. Yet again. How many times has she done that since the election? It never ends. Pawn off all the responsibility. Glenn Greenwald had a good tweet about this. It said, rarely do you get the question and the answer on the cover of the book. And it says, what happened? And then right underneath it, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Like, yeah, that's right. You happened. You happened. You built that, Hillary. And we already know. Is she going to say, hey, you know, maybe I really depressed the progressive base because I was for the war in Iraq. I orchestrated intervention in Libya. Look at what happened in Honduras. You know, you go down the list. I voted for the Patriot Act. I was in favor of NAFTA. I was in favor of deregulating Wall Street. I did over $600,000 speeches from Goldman Sachs. You know, we learned that I said, there's a real feeling of bigotry against the rich in America today. Or that she said, I have public positions and private positions as a politician, and they should be different. She said, I want totally free and open trade borders, which is basically TPP on steroids. So is it going to be, self-reflection? Hey, maybe we shouldn't have tried to cheat Bernie Sanders out of winning this thing, and we shouldn't have tried to hide the debates, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz shouldn't have pressured the media to get them to give me more favorable coverage, and maybe Donna Brazile shouldn't have sent me questions behind the scenes cheating before the debates. And no, we all know that it's going to be Russia.
Well, what happened was Russia. Russia said to Russia, foreign government interfering in our election and taking it from me. It's mine. I won. I was next in line.
You know, people say in her campaign early on, they said, I can't figure out why she's running. They said, I get the sense that she just thinks, like, it's my turn. Shut up and give it to me. And that's the feeling everybody got. Everybody got that feeling. Like, okay, whatever, this whole election thing is fucking getting in the way of the inevitable. Let me just be president already. Just fucking give it to me. What happened? That's almost like fucking O.J. Simpson's book.
I didn't do it, but if I did, here's how I would have done it.
Hillary Clinton. What happened? What happened? You fucking happened! And your shitty voting record, and your selling out to Wall Street, and your inability to be actually progressive and populist left, and your horrible campaign. Only 25% of your ads focus on policy. Only 25%. Is that fact going to be in your shitty book, Hillary? No, it's not. Because it's deflection, it's obfuscation, it's protecting the ego, it's anything but coming to terms with what you are and what you've done and how your vision has destroyed the Democratic Party. What happened? Yeah, so there you have it. Only 25% of her ads focused on policy. She was loaded to the brim with platitudes and cliches. She was her idea of millennial outreach on the campaign was to say, we should Pokemon go to the polls. Hey, look, here I am on Ellen, dancing with pop stars. See, look, I am dancing. Aren't I so hip and with it? Look, I am in Ohio, and I am with LeBron James campaigning. Don't you all want to vote for me? He is big in Ohio, right? Turns out all that, all the cliches and the platitudes and the celebrities and the fucking pandering to millennials, none of that wins out over having a solid policy message that would improve people's lives, which you didn't have. So they went with the disgusting Republican. Over you. You lost the most easily beatable candidate in history. Any answer to the question, what happened, that doesn't stress you is not a real answer. Okay. Eric Bolling had an argument with his fellow Fox News hosts about President Trump. And I think this is a really great clip because it sums up the problem with the debate in the country today. Let's watch.
They elected Donald Trump. They didn't elect the establishment wing of the party.
Sure.
They didn't elect Jeff Sessions. They elected Donald Trump.
And he has
Donald
no accountability. He can do whatever he wants without sticking to an ideological core.
But
that's the foundation of American politics.
Yeah,
we need to demand that.
Then next time 2020 comes around, put someone up that can do
that. Then why
Trump.
Do we have Republicans
but
and Democrats?
They couldn't do that. They couldn't do that.
But that's what
we need an ideological core.
You're laughing. Can I point something out?
Sure.
The stock market made another record high today. The labor market, there are more Americans employed today than ever in this country, ever. The housing market is on a record high than it's ever been also. What in the hell do you guys want? What else do you want?
I'd like to see more consistent employment in his staff and his...
That's what you want? Look at that in your camera, too. Tell those people you care about who Donald Trump employs, or do you care about how much they make, how much money they bring home to their family?
Why does it have to be an either-or? Why can't it be both? What it does is what looks bad is it shows that he's not – it doesn't make him look competent. It looks like he's still someone who's being engaged.
We're hung up. We're doing it. We're talking about Russia. We're talking about Jeff Sessions. What we should be talking about is how are the American people? Are they better off or worse off today than they were 6 months ago?
President Trump himself is the one that keeps talking about Jeff Sessions. He's the one that's making us talk about it. Because it's a little strange to have a president being a sort of Twitter troll to his AG. That's a little strange. And if something strange happens, we're going to talk about it.
Okay. So here's the thing about that clip. I hate everybody involved in that discussion. I hate everybody. Now let me explain exactly why that's the case. So first of all, as you could tell, Eric Bolling is very exasperated and he's trying to He's like, what do you want? Like, what do you want from Trump? And then he goes through a list of things that are supposedly good. I'm going to break that down. And then he uses that as evidence of, like, why are you guys all getting caught up on these dumb side issues when you should be happy as to the job Trump is doing? Okay. And then the response from a lot of the people, or probably the worst response, was, well, I wish there could be more consistency in this employment of his staff. That's your big, we got him, guys. We got him. He's not consistent in how he employs his staff. That makes me want to tell that guy to fuck off, okay? Then he goes, yeah, we just want more competency. And we want the White House to be run not like a game show. And, yeah. And what they're talking about is how Trump's been going after Jeff Sessions, his own attorney general. And, you know, they've been talking about Russia and, oh, my God, the effect they had on the election. And here's the thing, and here's why this clip frustrates me so much, is that the people who are supposed to be representing the liberals on that panel, they're epitomizing the problem with the so-called resistance, is that you're resisting on issues that don't connect with anybody and any of the voters. So in other words, you're wasting all your time and energy and political capital on side issues where there's no end game. So if you keep railing about, oh, my God, Jeff Sessions, look how he's treating him, or, oh, my God, Russia, 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 or, oh, my God, I wish he would be more consistent in employing his cabinet and not change the position so much. It's true that people are going to look at you like, what the fuck are you talking about? Really, this is what you're going to talk about? All the problems in the country, this is what you're focusing on? And then you open up the door for people on the right, like Eric Bolling, who, by the way, has all the wrong answers on policy, to look like the adult in the room. Because he steps in and he goes, look, the stock market, record high, employment, more people employed than ever before, housing market, highest it's ever been. What do you want? So now he looks like the adult because at least he's bringing up real issues, whereas you're talking about side issues and personality clashes and Real Housewives-level bickering and, oh, my God, Trump was so mean on Twitter to fucking Attorney General Jeff Sessions and, oh, wow, he's really shuffling people around in his administration a lot and, oh, Russia, Russia, Russia. So the sad thing is, Eric Bolling looks like the more reasonable person in this debate, which is fucking crazy because Eric Bolling's an idiot and Trump is an idiot. Now let me tell you exactly how the so-called resistance should have went down. When Eric Bolling brings up, well, the stock market's at an all-time high. Okay, pause. First of all, the stock market doubled under Obama. It collapsed under Bush. Obama doubled the motherfucker. And you never use that as an indicator of the health of the job market. Why? Because it's not. It's only an indicator of the health of the rich. Only the rich, overwhelmingly the rich, hold stocks. So when the stock market does well, it shows you how corporations are doing and how their profit is doing and how the rich are doing. So that's not a good indicator of how your average Joe in middle America, regular person, is doing. It's not an indicator of how working people are doing. So you didn't use the stock market as an indicator under Obama, but now you're using it as an indicator under Trump. The reality is it's not a good indicator under either one because it's not – it doesn't show you how regular people are doing, regular Americans are doing. So right off the bat, your stock market example, bullshit, put it to the side. Then he goes on to – well, employment's up. Okay, employment's up, but again, employment was up massively under Obama. But you never said that was a good thing. Why? Because the argument was under Obama, and this is correct, by the way. Yeah, but it's mostly low-wage jobs being created. You replace higher-paying jobs. Then we had the Great Recession. Now you're replacing them with lower-paying jobs. So people are underemployed. Yeah, that was the case under Obama. That's still the motherfucking case under Donald Trump. But now you use the employment numbers as evidence of how great he's doing. But those jobs pay shit. So that's another argument. Bullshit. Put it to the side. Then he says the housing market's at a record high. Because we're back in another bubble, you fucking dipshit. Because we reinflated the bubble. And it's going to come crashing down eventually. But no, blinders on, oh my God, Daddy Trump's in office, so now the housing market price is being super high, it's not a bubble, and it's a good thing. So every argument he makes where he looks like an adult, he's not an adult. He's not an adult. These are things that can easily be debunked when you go into the details of it. And then the job of the liberals on the panel, the so-called liberals on the panel, if they wanted to be serious, when he goes, hey, what do you want? What do you want from Trump? Oh, I don't know, maybe don't sign an executive order that pollutes the waterways. in West Virginia and makes it so that people get sick, because that's what he did. He's allowing coal companies to pollute the waterways. Maybe don't sign a bill that has a 6% approval rating that allows insurance, that allows, excuse me, internet companies to sell your information to third parties. He gutted internet privacy. Nobody's talking about it. Maybe don't destroy net neutrality, which is exactly what Trump's FCC is doing right now under Ajit Pai. Maybe don't propose a tax bill, which he proposed, which blows a gigantic hole in the debt and the deficit, is only a $40 tax cut for half the country, but gives $940,000 each to the top 1%, the ultra-rich, the mega-rich. Maybe don't do that. Maybe stop bombing fucking Syria and attacking Syrian troops. Maybe stop escalating in Iraq. Maybe stop massacring young American girls, 8-year-old American girls, like what happened in his first military raid that he approved as president. Maybe don't push a health care bill which takes health insurance away from 20 million fucking people and guts Medicaid to the tune of $800 billion. Maybe don't do that. So what do I want from Trump? There's a lot I want from Trump. What if he was a good president, what would he be pushing for? Medicare for all, a living wage, free college, ending the wars, ending the drug war. But he's not doing that. But again, the so-called resistance here on the panel is so shitty that the best they have, when asked, what do you want, they say, I want a president who's more consistent in how he employs people in his administration, and I want some competence, and he's not a game show host, and I want him not to tweet, and Sessions in Russia. Fucking losers. You just made Eric Bolling look reasonable because you're that unserious as a political thinker. That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Okay. All right, let's squeeze in a few more and then call it a day. Story I tried to get to the other day, but I didn't have time. I'll have to read it for you on the screen, because there's a video, and then there's, you know, words in the video. I think I have proof that the U.S. empire is coming to an end. Or, you know, Western civilization, whatever the fuck you want to call it, it's coming to an end. Why do I say that? Well, wearable chairs now exist. Let's watch a short video on this from Business Insider. So you can just sit anywhere with this thing. You attach it to yourself. You can lean on it, and it like holds up to 220 pounds each per side. And it locks in if you push a button. They're just showing pictures of it right now. And they're talking about how it could help in the workplace. And how it could increase productivity. And it can be custom fit to all sizes and stuff. I think you guys get the point. I don't know if anyone's listening. So it's on the market already. Yeah. Yeah. If I know anything about Americans, it's not going to be used by people at work. If it is used for people at work and they need it because whatever, they have to go bend into weird shapes to get under and fix something or whatever, that's cool. But we already know because of the scooter situation. Have you ever been to a casino before? People riding around on scooters. Why? Not because they need it, but because they just want to fucking sit down all day. there are people who are overweight and they're like, yeah, fuck it, I'm checking out. Give me a scooter. That's exactly what this is going to be used for. People are going to walk around and just be like, yeah, I want to sit. Well, I can always sit because I'm wearing a seat. And then you press a button and you sit. Wow, man. Wow. Look, I'm generally pro-laziness. And I mean that. I mean, I'm naturally, when it comes to many things, I'm naturally lazy. But this is a little bit too far. Oh, these are mass-produced and people start buying them all over the place. You're going to start seeing people just walking around with a chair attached to their ass. And just randomly, all right, got a break. And then you just sit down wherever you are. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's a good thing. It could be good for work and stuff, but outside of that, I mean, can you imagine you give yourself, take some Xanax and walk around with your attachable chair to your ass? And, I mean, geez, you have party anywhere you go. Maybe it's not such a bad thing. Get super high, and then you walk around, and you're like, yep, time to relax. Press the button, you sit down. People are like, dude, you're in the middle of traffic. You might want to, you know, move a little bit. I think maybe I'm making fun of it because deep down I'm like, maybe I should get one. Okay. All right, final story of the day. And it's a good one. It's a happy one. So we have a day that many of us have been waiting for. It's finally here. Take a look at this. Florida's Marion County School District will be banning daily homework assignments in elementary schools starting in fall 2017. Students will be asked to simply read for 20 minutes each night instead, according to News 6 WKMG. Students will be allowed to choose their own reading material, and teachers, libraries, and volunteers will provide guidance. If you can read well, everything else comes. Kevin Christensen, a spokesperson for the district, told WFTV Eyewitness News 9, although daily homework won't be part of the curriculum, Christensen said teachers will still occasionally assign things like research papers or science projects. Heidi Mayer, the school district's new superintendent, told the Washington Post the decision was based on research by Richard Allington, an education professor at University of Tennessee, who argued that reading boosts younger students' academic performance more than assigning them traditional homework. Yeah, I agree with this. I think it's a good move. I always thought it was kind of bullshit. Homework was bullshit because, you know, people have made the point, a comedian once made the point, like, I don't tell my teacher what to do when they go home. Why do they get to tell me what to do when I go home? Or, you know, when it comes to work, for example. The way it's supposed to be, you clock in at 9, clock out at 5, then, you know, you have other shit in life to do. So you should, I got to go shopping, I got to pick up the kids, I got to do this, I got to do that. So could you imagine, like, and to be fair, many jobs that are salary jobs, they do have to work a lot and off hours and whatnot, but I think probably most jobs, you clock in, you clock out, and you're good. And that's the way it should be. And when kids are young, it's like, don't you want them to also be kids a little bit and to not feel like the weight of overwhelming pressure to do menial tasks that, let's face it, most of the shit you end up learning in school is shit that you can dismiss at some point anyway? And I want to be crystal clear. I'm not arguing against school. Obviously, education is a wonderful thing. It's a fantastic thing. But I think it should be done in the most efficient way possible and in a way that works. And I know that there are many other modern countries that have kind of moved away from the, I don't know, authoritarian kind of way of doing school where the teacher, everything I say is gospel and you must do whatever I say. And they've moved more towards, I don't know, a path where you kind of pique the interest of the kids and then they go down their own path as to what they want to learn and what they want to get involved in. And, you know, I think the idea is that if something, in order to have something be educational, it also has to be something that they don't despise, because if they despise it, they're going to shut down and not want to learn anything. So you got to keep them open and interested, and the way to do that is not to be like, When you go home, you're going to, after being here all day working, when you go home, you're going to have to work for another 2 hours. Like, what the fuck is that shit? So, look, I know just from my own perspective, and maybe I have a little more of a rebellious streak than other people, but just on the concept alone, I was like, yeah, go fuck yourself. Like, I would do my homework, but, you know, I would half-ass it and not care and... Because you put me in a corner. You put me in a position where I'm there fucking working at school all day, and then I got to go home and do some more shit that you want me to do. Bitch, I was there for 6 hours. You couldn't have me do it when I was there? The fuck is wrong with you? So you got to be, I don't know, you got to be reasonable. You got to be open-minded. I always said I thought I learned more when I wasn't in school, where I had my things I was interested in, and you'd read a lot about it when you're off school. Now it seems like they're trying to work that into the curriculum. Okay, so we're not going to do the standard homework. We're going to learn everything you have to learn. That's like some of the stuff you might not want to learn, but you should learn because it's important information. That's going to be in class, but then your homework is going to be basically reading something that you want to read. So it's like saying find something you're interested in and pursue it. That's basically what it's like saying, and I think that's really good advice because I think school, the way it's worked for a long time, has made kids feel like shit when they didn't need to feel like shit. Because they feel like, oh my goodness, I don't like it when I have to sit still for fucking hours and hours and some old boring person barks at me some uninteresting stuff. Something must be wrong with me. No, nothing's wrong with you. It's just that the model we were using is pretty outdated, and now it's time for that model to evolve, not so that we can escape learning, but so that we can learn in a more efficient way. And I think this is a good first step. Okay. All right, guys, I love you. And we're done for the week, skis. But, of course, we will be back on Monday. Everybody enjoy your weekend. Much love. Big kisses. Mwah. I'm out. Peace.